It's the Painless Living Show with host and pain treatment expert, Dr. Cassaro, and co-host Dennis Bergmeier. If you or someone you love suffers from chronic pain, get answers here. Call now, 888-440-4442. That's 888-440-4442. Or visit us online, painlessslivingradio.com.
And good morning.
Good morning to you too, and welcome to the Painless Living Show.
And hopefully it's a good morning. If you are suffering from some pain, we can make it a better morning for you, however, very easily.
That's the idea.
It is indeed. We are going to be talking today for the next hour together about whiplash specifically, or about any pain you may be suffering from at the moment. We're always open to discussion on topics off what the doctor has decided to talk about.
That's right. We talk about whatever our callers ask.
It's your show. Give us a call at 888-440-4442 at any time between, now and the next 60 minutes or 59 minutes and 32 seconds or however much it is. Or at any time when we're not on the air, you can reach us through painlesslivingshow.com and you can contact us through there and ask the doctor a specific question and you will get it answered directly and
all
maybe even hear yourself
are
on the
answered.
Air. We have one right now. Now, whiplash, first off, I think most of us will think, well, I can't be suffering. This pain I'm having right now cannot be a result of whiplash because I've never been in an accident. But that's not the only cause of whiplash, is it?
These days, that's probably the most common cause is a car accident. But it can happen from a serious fall. Mm-hmm. It can also happen as a sporting injury. There's a lot of ways you can get a whiplash. I remember I took care of someone not too long ago that got a pretty serious whiplash playing racquetball in a racquetball court.
Proving once again that exercise is dangerous.
There you go.
Yeah. We, again, encourage you, if you can't, you would prefer not to call directly at 888-440-4442 to get in touch through the website at painlesslivingshow.com. The contact button and send an email. And we have one of those that I'd like to get you right now if we might do that.
Sure.
It says, Doctor, my arms have hurt since a whiplash injury 6 months ago. My doctor recommended that I get an epidural injection. I don't want to. I went to the doctor who was going to do the epidural injection. He told me he was going to stick a needle in my neck, and that's all I needed to hear. I had an epidural 11 years ago when my son was born. I had a headache for months. I'm not sure I ever returned to normal. My back still hurts where the original needle sticks were. My epidural never even relieved my labor pain. It was a bad experience that I do not wish to repeat. So what is it about epidurals that's supposed to be so good, and what are the alternatives? And I'm going to be taking notes, because anything that can make it so I don't have to go through a needle, I'm in for it.
Okay, I thought you were going to say so you wouldn't have to go through labor.
Yeah.
Yeah. The one reason that I included this for the show today is because it struck me as an unusual question. And when I stopped to think about it, the reason it's unusual is us doctors always assume that way too frequently assume that the person we're talking to already knows what we're talking about.
Right.
And that's probably the problem here, is that this lady's doctor assumed that she already knew what he was talking about when he said you need to have an epidural injection.
Mm-hmm.
And she thought she knew what he was talking about based on her bad experience 11 years ago.
Right.
And that's all she needed to hear. She's not interested.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what I want to do is talk a little bit about what the difference is between an epidural injection for chronic pain and an epidural injection that you would get for labor and delivery, and then answer her question about what's supposed to be so good.
Okay.
Because we use the same term because the medicine goes in the same place, but it's different medicine, different purpose, really very little similarity between the two, and yet there probably is a whole lot more confusion than what doctors frequently perceive. So first of all, about what is, why is it called an epidural? Okay, the dura is the sac that has the spinal fluid and spinal cord in it.
Okay.
Epidural space is that area outside that sac. So it's just the space that's around the outside of the sac with the spinal fluid and spinal cord in it. So whenever you put something in that space, that's the epidural space. And what we do is we shorten it to just call it epidural.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it's an incorrect use of the word because it's an adjective and we're using it as a noun.
But all doctors understand what it means.
Well, it has evolved into the jargon, the medical jargon.
Right.
And if you don't speak the jargon, it can be confusing.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one of the problems that you can get into in any field where you speak in jargon. And I think all of us can identify with the Washington crowd that speaks in their jargon, and we don't know what they're talking about, and they do that on purpose because they don't want us to know what they're
exactly.
talking about. But that's kind of the situation here. So it's because the medicine is put in the same place, it sounds like it has the same name,
mm-hmm.
but it's really two completely different things. First of all, that injection that she had 11 years ago for labor and delivery was in her low back.
Right.
Because that's where the nerves go to or start from mm-hmm. that you would want to decrease the sensation from to reduce the pain from labor. The epidural injection for her whiplash injury would be at the base of her neck, actually. It's mm-hmm. when she said in her neck, all she needed to hear. I don't know what the doctor told her or if he pointed or showed her, but this is actually the upper back where your neck and your thoracic spine come together.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of just above the top of your shoulder blades
right.
in the middle. And it's using a much smaller needle usually. The needle for the injection during labor and delivery is big.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to put a catheter through it to continuously deliver more medication.
I've seen garden hoses that weren't quite that
That's
wide.
About the size. Yeah, it's big. On the other hand, when you're having an injection for chronic pain,
mm-hmm.
nobody's going to leave a catheter in there. So it can be a real small needle. It can be usually a 22-gauge needle, which is smaller than the needle they use to draw your blood.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
When you have to have blood tests done.
Right.
So it's a whole different order of magnitude on the needle size. Plus, in labor and delivery, it's like the woman is wrestling a watermelon. And I actually got that terminology from a woman. So
it's good.
Yeah, especially if you have a labor contraction
mm-hmm.
during the process. There's a whole lot more going on than there is when you can be comfortably in one position
right.
for the injection for chronic pain. And because there's a whole lot different situation, the experience is usually a whole lot different.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is when you're in labor, because of the changes from your pregnancy, you're a whole lot more prone to get a headache afterwards if there is a small puncture of that dural sac.
Ah, okay.
What caused that headache that she suffered with for months was a leak of her spinal fluid.
Okay.
The tissues are different when she's not pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So the chance of that happening, not only because of her not being pregnant, but also because of being in a different part of her spine,
mm-hmm.
the chances of that are much, much smaller. They're not zero, but they're nothing compared to the chance
right.
the first time around for labor and delivery. And even if you do get a tear in that sac and leak some spinal fluid in the upper part of the spine, your chances of developing a spinal headache are very small.
Okay.
It's nothing like the risk she faced before. So I guess that's the first part is distinguishing between the two. Now, what it is that's supposed to be so good is the medicine that's used.
Okay.
During labor and delivery, it's numbing medicine. Mm-hmm. You just want to make her numb
make
so
it
she's
go
not
away.
Feeling
yeah.
the pain.
Yep.
For chronic pain, what you want to do is inject something that's anti-inflammatory and soothing to those tissues to help stabilize the irritated nerve tissue. And that's usually a cortisone medication, and there may be other medications mm-hmm. in there also. So it's different medication that has a whole different risk
right.
category to it, but a whole different benefit. The numbing medicine just lasts for a short time, hours at the most.
Yeah.
The cortisone lasts for weeks. So it's a whole different situation. And it also has properties that can aid with healing, especially after an acute injury like a whiplash.
Okay.
Where the numbing medicine doesn't do anything to heal.
Yeah.
So there's differences there.
Yeah. A little question just popped into my head because you hear cortisone. Those of us who watch sports on TV, you know, the NFL season, you see the football player went off hobbling, unable to walk. They carry him off and they give him a cortisone shot and he comes back in, 15 minutes and plays again. Where do they give those injections for, like, you hurt your knee? Where does that injection go? Does it go in the knee itself or?
Yeah, that's a tough question to answer because it depends a lot on what the injury is and what the purpose of the injection is. And it's not always the same.
I gotcha.
The guy that comes back in 15 minutes, mm-hmm. that's very dramatic. That's much more dramatic than what can be expected from just the cortisone injection itself.
Gotcha.
And I'd suspect that there's more going on there, like probably a lot of ice and wrapping with a tight ACE bandage, or if it's a rib fracture, putting a rib binder on. I've seen many games where the quarterback gets rib fractures in the first half, and he's playing in the second half with a rib binder on.
Yeah, a rib binder and also a reminder that he's making six figures for playing in that game, and he better show up.
Somebody whispered in his ear during halftime.
Now, the final question this woman had in the email, which I think a lot of us are interested in hearing also, is what are the alternatives to an epidural? Are there any?
Yeah, there are always alternatives. I mean, she might just not want to have a needle stuck in her spine. Okay. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter.
And
what
I can
the
relate to that. Yeah.
Yeah. It doesn't matter what the explanation is or what the difference is between what's proposed now and what her bad experience was. Mm-hmm. None of that might matter. She's drawn a line in the sand and that's not being crossed. So there are always alternatives. And it depends on what the situation is. But in this situation with a whiplash, I'd say the alternatives include things like traction. Now, I'm sure, even though she didn't say anything about it here, I'm sure she's had some physical therapy mm-hmm. because that would really be first-line treatment for a whiplash.
Yeah.
A lot of times in physical therapy or as part of the physical therapy routine, they will include traction. If they haven't, that would be something to do. Another thing would be yoga or stretching exercises to try to get those tissues that were injured to start moving through their normal range of motion again.
Mm-hmm.
And these things don't have to be done one at a time. They can kind of be done in combination with each other.
Okay. When you say traction, too, one of the pictures that most of us conjure in our heads is the guy laying in the bed with the pulleys and the ropes all over the place. What exactly happens with, like, a whiplash injury if you're being treated with some traction? What does that take? What form?
Well, first of all, if you get traction in a hospital, mm-hmm. especially for a fracture in your legs or maybe a problem with your low back, it's very likely to be what you just described with all the pulleys and weights.
Mm-hmm.
That hasn't changed a lot. But you can get similar traction at home on your own. And I hear that music in the background.
Uh-huh.
We're coming up to a break, so we'll talk some about traction that you can get at home when we come back from the break.
888-440-4442. If you have any questions, give us a call.
To learn more about the topics or products mentioned on the program, visit our website, PainlessLivingRadio.com.
888-440-4442 is the phone number. Whiplash the topic or anything that you may be experiencing with pain in your life right now if you want some answers.
That's right. Or you can send a message through the contact form on the website.
Right.
I'll answer all of them, and some of them we address on the air. But the preferred method is to call in, because mm-hmm. then we can have a dialogue back and forth to try to gather more information.
Right. Plus, you may not be the only person suffering from the particular problem, and it'd be nice to share your experience in the conversation with the rest of our listeners.
Which is one of the primary purposes for us being here.
Makes perfect sense, doesn't
it? Yes.
When last we left, we were about to start discussing traction and other alternatives.
Okay, we'll start with the traction and things that you can do at home.
Mm-hmm.
Number one on my list would be an inversion table. And this is if you've had a whiplash, even if it isn't causing you any trouble now, if you've recovered from it, it might not be a bad idea to at least have the thought of buying an inversion table in the back of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because chances are at some time in the future, that whiplash will come back as a reminder of youth, and it'll be good to know something you can do to help relieve that pain. An inversion table is a table that stands at a slant,
mm-hmm.
and you lean against it and buckle your ankles, and then tilt it back so that your head is lower than your feet.
Mm-hmm.
And it uses gravity to put a gentle traction over your whole body. It works very well for most people, and it gets traction over your whole spine. So whether it's a low back, neck, somewhere in between, you can get the benefit of traction. And for someone that has a known back problem, that's something that you should probably consider doing as part of your regular daily routine, either morning or evening. That's one of the single best things you can do to help keep from getting worse as mm-hmm. time goes on. For someone with a known whiplash that's causing pain, like this woman has pain in both arms, whether that'll by itself be enough to get rid of that pain or not, I can't be sure, but she'll probably feel a whole lot better while she's on the inversion table and for a short time after she gets off. And doing that on a regular basis will help keep it from getting worse. But if the inversion table isn't enough by itself, you can buy home traction devices. The good news about those is that insurance will cover the medical traction device.
Cool.
It won't pay for an inversion table.
Hmm.
But the inversion table is good for your whole body.
Yeah.
And it's real easy to use, doesn't cost very much, costs less than the traction devices. So that's its advantage. But the good advantage about the traction device is you can control the amount of tension
right.
that you get. And you can get more than what's available with an inversion table.
Now, should someone self-diagnose basically and say, hey, I'm going to go get a medical traction device without first consulting with a physician to make sure that it is indeed what they need, and then again with advice on how to use it?
Well, you can buy these medical traction devices without a prescription.
Sure.
I've seen them on eBay. You know, I've seen them at yard sales, estate mm-hmm. sales, things like that. But if you want insurance to pay for it, you go through your doctor,
right.
you get a prescription for it. And the good news about that is not only do you get the device with the insurance helping to pay for it, but you usually get somebody that delivers the new device that's from the manufacturer that mm-hmm. shows you how to use it properly.
Right. That's
kind of an important
detail. That's the operative consideration,
yeah.
really, because anything that is not used correctly is not going to be a help. And one of the questions I had in researching this, and you just alluded to it very quickly a few moments ago, is that whiplash can manifest itself long after the injury that caused it happened. Is that true?
Well, that's true. Most of the time, though, people knew that they were at least shaken up at the time
sure.
of the whiplash. They might not have realized that they had a significant injury, and that's okay. But chances are that 20, 30 years later, they'll still remember that they had that car wreck or that
right.
they fell off that ladder or whatever the inciting injury was.
Mm-hmm.
But what happens is that starts a degenerative process there. Something that was injured, and then it starts to heal. And that healing process is what actually gives rise to things like bone spurs.
Okay.
And over time, the bone spurs start putting pressure on a nerve. And then you start getting pain. Or they start squeezing the nerve and you start getting numbness. And all of these things can come on. The typical time frame would be 20 to 30 years after the original injury.
Whoa.
So if you're involved in a serious motor vehicle accident, let's say when you're 20, sometime between 40 and 50, you're probably going to get a little reminder of that motor vehicle accident.
It will rear its ugly head. 888-440-4442. If there are any questions that you want to have answered, please do not hesitate to give us a call. But I have one quick question for you while we're waiting. Neck braces, do they perform any functional thing, or is that just a way to get sympathy?
Well, I think that's... doctors usually don't order those. Lawyers do.
Okay. Yeah. Then we're looking for sympathy. Gotcha. Okay.
Well, years ago, that was the thought, was that if you injure the neck, you rest the neck and wait for it to get better. And that's where the concept of using a neck brace after whiplash came from.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that observant doctors and family members realized that all these people that wore neck braces after they had their whiplash, once they recovered and no longer needed the neck brace, they still couldn't turn their head to look at anybody. Mm-hmm. If they wanted to talk to the person next to them, they had to turn their whole body in order to talk to them. So they started realizing that, you know, maybe we're not doing a lot of service to people with those neck braces, especially since when we look at people that don't wear a neck brace, they seem to be a lot more flexible, and we really can't tell a difference in the amount of pain or other infirmity that they have after the whiplash. So we got away from routinely using neck braces. Usually the only time there would be a neck brace now is if you had a serious enough injury that required surgery.
Okay.
For instance, if you had a broken neck and you had to have a fusion surgery after that, you would wear a neck brace, but that's because of the surgery more than because of the original injury.
All right. And again, my head is just filled with all kinds of questions because I have had people who have actually, you know, suffered from this particular thing. But at what point, you know, exercise is one of the ways, you know, as it is with most pain injuries, to help. But at what point do you realize that working through the pain of exercise is really not good? I mean, there's the pain that comes from, comes from exercise that goes away the more you exercise because you're strengthening the muscles.
Right.
But then there's pain that's not associated with the exercise that may not be helped by that exercise. How do you determine the difference there?
Okay, that brings up issue of physical conditioning.
Okay.
If you are in poor physical condition when you get the injury, then you've got two hurdles. The first is you've got to build up your exercise tolerance.
Right.
And the example I use there is if you're used to running, running a mile might be just warming up for you.
Right.
But if you're not a runner, if you're used to riding the couch, and you go out and run a mile, it might take you 2 weeks to recover.
Right.
So it's the same thing after a whiplash. If you're in good physical condition, you can go right into rehabilitation.
Okay.
If you're not in good physical condition, then the first hurdle you have to cross is building yourself up to be able to tolerate the rehabilitation.
Getting in good enough shape to actually have the cure.
Right. Yeah. And this is one of the areas where I think that it really pays to go to physical therapy instead of just trying to do it on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the things that the physical therapist is really good at is being able to do a more comprehensive assessment to determine where you are as far as that rehabilitation process.
Right.
And at what point do they want to start, and then how do they progress to take you through that? Now, that's the good part. The bad part is your insurance company may say, we're going to cover just a certain number of visits or just a certain period of time.
Right.
And you might get to the end of that insurance coverage, and you're just getting to the beginning of where you're starting to rehabilitate from your injury.
Uh-huh.
So then you have to continue on your own.
So exercise now.
Well, the interesting thing is that the single biggest determinant of whether you're going to have a chronic lingering problem is the condition you're in at the time of the injury.
Right.
And, of course, after the injury, it's too late to get in good condition for the injury.
Makes perfect sense.
Now, everything you do is probably beneficial, but still it would be better if you're well-conditioned first when you get injured because you can start the rehabilitative process right away. And that's kind of going back to your example about the sports athlete that comes back in 15 minutes.
Right.
These are world-class athletes.
Yes.
They can get injuries that they bounce back from quickly, usually the next week, not 15 minutes, but they're back in the game the next week. Where if people that are not world-class athletes get that same injury, it might be a month or more.
Right.
And people that are totally out of condition, they might never recover from it fully. Yeah.
So there you go. Another reason why you should get out there and exercise whether you need it or not, because you really need it. And if you need any answers, we've got them. 888-440-4442. Have phone lines open, and a doctor is ready and willing to answer any and all questions you might have. So give us a call. It's 888-440-4442. Give us a call. We will be right back.
It's the Painless Living Show. To be part of the program, call now. 1-888-440-4442.
And we are back. Whiplash, the topic of the program this weekend. How do chiropractors come into the mix here? What should that be an alternative treatment or the first line of defense? Or
well, let me answer it first if it was me.
Okay.
I think the first appointment I'd make is with a chiropractor.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'm a medical doctor, but I've been taking care of people with whiplash injuries for 30 years. And what I can tell you is the people that see a chiropractor, especially in the first few days after whiplash injury, they're the ones that years later still have a full normal range of motion of their neck.
All right.
The ones that don't see a chiropractor, they lose some of their range of motion. Now, it depends on a lot of things how stiff their neck gets.
Okay.
But the point is it's not as flexible as it used to be.
Sure.
So just to try to maintain flexibility, I'd say see a chiropractor. Plus, a lot of what you're going to get from a chiropractor is all the things that are also going to help relieve the pain. Like they make those joints move so that they don't start getting stiff and sticking to each other. Also, that movement helps to drain the normal swelling fluid and any bleeding that might have occurred deep inside that you can't see, helps that to absorb and get carried away.
Wow. Okay.
So those are good things. And then the chiropractor is probably also going to do things that give you the electronic equivalent of a massage. I haven't met anybody that doesn't feel better after a massage. And they may even have a massage therapist there.
Right.
So there are a lot of other modalities that they do that are very similar to what you get. In fact, they're identical to what you would get in physical therapy.
Okay.
So I'd say a chiropractor would be a real good choice right after a whiplash. Now, if you're 6 weeks, 2 months out from a whiplash and you're still having problems, that's when it's probably prudent to go ahead and get more investigation into the extent of your injury and see if there is something that's been missed or something, some other treatment that might be more appropriate. And the initial workup on that would probably be another good thorough physical examination and maybe some more comprehensive imaging studies like an MRI.
Gotcha. All right, but first a chiropractor.
That's chiropractor would be, that's right up their alley as far as what they do is take care of those kind of acute injuries that have potentially serious consequences in the long run.
Right.
And they can minimize that.
That's fantastic. You know, one of the topics that, or one of the subjects that keeps popping up in every weekly show, no matter what the pain is from, is sleep. Because as you point out over and over again, the body repairs itself while we are sleeping. Now, with a neck injury, sleeping can be problematic. Is there anything you can do with equipment, like pillows, extra pillows, less pillows, firmer pillows, softer pillows, or anything like that to make it so it doesn't your neck doesn't hurt quite so bad while you're trying to sleep?
Yes.
Okay, great. Now what do we talk about? Let's move on.
All of that stuff is good. The thing is, like you said, sleep is important. Mm-hmm. That's when you're going to get your healing. But the pain, a lot of times, keeps you awake.
It does, yeah. It interferes badly.
If pillows will help, then pillows are a good thing. The trouble is, it's going to be different for everybody.
Okay.
So I can't just recommend one type of pillow or one way of orienting the pillows. It's going to be trial and error.
Okay.
The other things are what you can do as soon as possible, depending upon what other injuries you might have, try to get back to some normal activity. Just getting out and taking a walk every day, especially if it's a minor whiplash and your neck is really the only problem you have. If you can get out and take a walk every day, walking, believe it or not, gives a pretty good workout for your neck. Not just the support muscles, but with every step, all the joints and everything in your neck are moving an attempt to keep your neck and head straight up.
That makes sense.
So that starts the workout. That'll be a good way to help not only with reducing the pain so you can sleep, but it also just exercise in general helps with sleep. People that exercise on a daily basis usually sleep better every night.
Right, right. So,
and then there's other things. You can take over-the-counter anti-inflammatory medicines. They'll help with the pain. Use ice, heating pad. That can help. There's a long list of things. There are prescription medications. That's usually not, unless you have a severe whiplash, that's usually not appropriate first line. More the over-the-counter medications would be appropriate. But if the pain is so severe, then pain medications or something on a short-term basis, if for no other reason to help with sleep.
Right. Everybody, even medical people I've talked to, seem to be a little bit confused about when ice and when heat therapies are appropriate.
Well, heat therapy is appropriate if you have a heating pad. How about that?
So all the time.
For the spine, generally heat for most people gets them more relief and is probably more beneficial. But for the first, let's say 24 hours, the first day after an injury, ice will help a lot with keeping the swelling down.
Okay.
And a lot of times the magnitude of swelling correlates real well with the magnitude of pain.
Right.
So if you can keep the swelling down, it's going to hurt less.
Okay.
That's one of the reasons that when people get injured, for instance, in a sporting event where basketball, football, whatever, the first thing you see the trainer doing is putting ice on the injured body part.
Yeah. And then you have the icy hot patches now that are available over the counter, and that's an oxymoron and it confuses me.
Actually, I'm glad you brought that up because those things are really good.
Okay.
Okay. Whether that's that brand name or any of these things that provide the prolonged penetrating heat, whether it's chemical heat or thermal heat, they really do work well. Oh. The only, the only problem with using them more is it becomes an economic limitation for most people.
Yeah.
Because they're not cheap.
No.
But it's something that's very difficult to harm yourself with. Even the ones that make heat, you're very unlikely to get enough heat to cause a burn. But it can aid with the healing process and really help to reduce the pain.
And those, now they even have the ones that emulate the chiropractor's little electric stimulation things.
Oh, that would be like a TENS unit.
Yeah.
Yeah, TENS is for transcutaneous electrical nerve stimulation.
Yeah,
that's why
one of those electric thingies.
That's why we call it TENS. Now, those also are available without a prescription.
Mm-hmm.
You can buy them off the internet or even at stores.
Yeah.
You can also get them by prescription, and a whiplash would be one of the type conditions when insurance would pay for a TENS unit. And the good thing about those is that you can use those while you work. So if you're able to go back to work, you can wear that under your clothes and continue to use it, which would make it a whole lot easier for you to get through the workday, maybe.
Yeah, especially if you have to sit for a living. And
Right. And then if it does become a chronic problem, the TENS unit is something you can use on an ongoing basis.
Yeah. Getting back to our original email here from the woman who said that her arms have hurt since she suffered her whiplash injury. What is that correlation? And is arm pain a symptom? Can you have the arm pain as a symptom without having any other pain that lets you know it's whiplash?
Well, I'll start with the first part. The correlation is that all of the nerves that go to the arms start in the neck.
Okay.
So if she got her whiplash injury and it just so happened to focus the damage or the effect of the injury on the place where the nerves come out that go to her arms, then she could get pain. And the fact that it's in both arms, I'd suspect that she probably does have a disc injury.
Mm-hmm.
And it's enough of a disc injury where it's either affecting her spinal cord directly or it's affecting the nerve roots that come out both sides. So either way, it's a significant problem there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why she's got the arm pain. And you can get that even if the neck no longer hurts. A lot of times, all you get in the neck is the muscle stiffness. But
right.
you can get pain in the arms that can be pretty severe. It can feel like electric shocks. It can mm-hmm. feel like a sword running, like you're having a skewer put up your arm for, mm-hmm. I mean, it can be mm-hmm. some severe pain. And your neck doesn't really bother you.
In light of that, how the heck do you guys begin to discern what the problem is? Because I get so confused just knowing there's so many things can be caused by different things in different places. It's got to be so confusing for a physician in your position to start the, I guess, just trying to figure out what's going on.
Well, the first step is that song, you know, about the neck bones connected to the... Yeah. Well, always go back to that.
Okay.
That's the first step.
When in doubt, refer to the first grade. Gotcha.
Right. And then a good physical examination. There's no substitute for a good physical examination. You've got to lay hands on and feel where the things don't feel right
mm-hmm.
in order to figure out where the problem is that's causing pain in the arm. Because if someone has pain in the arm, it could be that they broke their arm.
Right.
You know, so you've right. got to figure all that stuff out. There's no substitute for
mm-hmm.
a good thorough exam. And then x-rays, things like that, are part of that thorough exam.
Gotcha. All right. We're trying to be as thorough as we possibly can be, too, here on the Painless Living Show. 888-440-4442. There is still time. If you have a question you'd like to ask the doctor specifically, do not hesitate. Jump on the phone. It's 888-440-4442. More questions, more answers. Stick around. We're coming right back.
It's like an office visit without the copay. The Painless Living Show.
That's a pretty enticing part of this whole thing, too, is no copay.
That's right.
It's just a simple toll-free phone call, 888-440-4442.
And we are in the last segment of the show now.
Yes, we are.
So if you've got a question about chronic pain, this is the time to call. Otherwise, you'll have to hold your question for another week.
That's right, and that's not going to be good. Not going to be good. Your next-door neighbor doesn't know the answers that Dr. Cassaro knows. So please use us whenever you need it. 888-440-4442. Or again, if it's a question of being shy, not wanting to be on the radio, painlesslivingshow.com. You can always use a contact button there and get a question directly to the doctor that will be answered. Anti-inflammatory medications. For those of us who are not frequent users of any medications, what are those? I mean, the generic types of stuff.
Well, it's aspirin and all the other medications that are meant to work like aspirin without aspirin's side effects, or at least without as bad, the side effects as bad. Those would be things like ibuprofen, naproxen, and others. Those are the most common ones, though. And they're available over the counter.
Yeah.
And they're very effective.
In multiple brand names.
Multiple brand names, yes. And they work well to, now, before I go on how they work, one that is not generally considered an anti-inflammatory medicine, but it's also an over-the-counter pain reliever, would be acetaminophen.
Right.
Tylenol and all of the other brand names. It's not really an anti-inflammatory the way that the others are. It works a little bit differently. But the way that they work is they really do help to cut down on the type of inflammation that you get that causes pain. And this would be not just the inflammation right after the injury, but even long time later. Like if you've now got arthritis and you're in your 50s and it might have started as a football injury in high school, those anti-inflammatory medicines also help for the inflammation that's in that joint, making it hurt on a daily basis 30 years later.
Right. Now, do those have any side effects? The over-the-counter stuff?
No, of course not.
Stomach irritations or anything?
If they had side effects, they wouldn't be on the market, right?
Yeah, of course. I believe that.
Yeah, they all have side effects, and for some people it can be significantly risky to be taking those medicines, especially people that have kidney problems.
Okay.
But there's usually warnings on the label. And certainly if you have any questions, the best person to ask is that pharmacist that's right there, whether you're getting them at the grocery store or wherever. Chances are, even if it's an over-the-counter medicine, there's a pharmacist within eyesight of where you're picking up that box.
And they can tell you what you need to know.
Well, especially if you're taking other medicines, whether they're over-the-counter medicines or prescription medicines, ask that pharmacist if it's going to interact or if it predisposes you to other problems. And if it's something you should stay away from, he'd probably be the first one to be able to tell you before you waste your money on it.
I remember one of the happiest days of my elementary school career was when I learned how to pronounce acetylsalicylic acid. I don't know. I just can pronounce it. I can't explain it. I just thought I was smart.
Yeah, well, that's aspirin.
I sounded smart.
That's the original anti-inflammatory. And that is a naturally occurring compound. So it's not, I mean, it comes from a factory these days, but it originally was a nutritional.
So Mr. Bayer didn't invent it. He just found it.
That's right.
A lot of people like vitamin regimens. They figure they take vitamins for everything every day anyhow. Are there specific vitamins that can help this particular situation? Or
yes, there are. Depending on the type of pain you have, we were talking just now about inflammation.
Right.
There are some natural anti-inflammatory, I guess you can call them compounds. You don't want to call them medicines. And one in particular that works better than the medication, the over-the-counter medications, even some of the prescription medications, is turmeric. It's very strong anti-inflammatory effects. And that's the yellow substance that makes mustard yellow.
Really?
Makes the prepared mustard you buy yellow.
Wow.
It's readily available. It's not very expensive. You can buy it in capsules at the health food store if you want to, or just buy it at the spice aisle at the grocery store. It's a whole lot cheaper. It's the same stuff.
Or just ask for your next hot dog with extra mustard.
There you go. I don't know about the hot dog, but the mustard is probably all right. And then also for people with old injuries, glucosamine, that's one that gets a lot of press. It's very effective. In fact, there are now 25-year follow-up studies for people that take arthritis medicines, like we talked about, aspirin, ibuprofen, things like that, versus glucosamine. And multiple studies over long periods of time, 25 years, show that the people that take glucosamine do better in the long run than the people that take the anti-inflammatory medicines.
Very good to know. And that, again, is very easily, readily accessible, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
Now, that's one that it really pays to do your homework to get a good brand, and the good brand is not going to be cheap.
Yeah.
If you find a bargain on glucosamine, chances are you found a sham.
If it's too good to be true, it probably isn't.
Yeah. Some nutritional supplements, it really doesn't matter too much what brand you get, because there's not a lot that can go wrong in getting it to you in an effective form.
Mm-hmm.
But for glucosamine, anything. There are many ways along the processing path where things can go wrong that make the final product that gets into your body ineffective. So it's worth it to pay the money, because the most expensive one is the one that doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you can spend three times as much, but as long as it's working, it's not going to be a waste of money. So there you
go. And then other nutritional supplements that are good for general health as well as painful joints and things like that would be fish oil.
Okay. Again, available over the counter in capsule form.
Fish oil. And minerals. Mm-hmm. In general, minerals are, well, they're available in mineral supplement, or you can use things like unrefined sea salt to get a good supply of minerals.
Mm, okay.
But where minerals come from in your diet naturally is vegetables.
Right.
So people that eat a lot of vegetables, you're probably in better condition than the people that never eat anything green.
Now, again, fresh vegetables?
That'd be the best. The fresher, the better.
Right.
And, of course, eating a salad is better than eating a canned version of the same vegetable.
Right.
Eat fresh asparagus instead of canned asparagus, that type thing.
Oh, definitely.
And a fresh salad instead of canned spinach.
One more question really quickly before we're done for the day. What is the correlation between pain and nausea? Are they caused by the same things, or does the pain affect the nausea? Or?
Well, I'm going to start by saying they're two different things, but then I'll hedge that and say it's all one body. You're all connected together. And what's going on anywhere on your body really does have an effect everywhere else. And a lot of times the effect between pain and nausea is not just through your nervous system, where you feel the pain and something about the link in your brain triggers the nausea, but it's also the reaction of your immune system.
Okay.
The same thing that makes you feel nauseated when you have the flu, after you have an injury, your immune system that's rushing to help heal that injury can also result in a feeling where you're nauseated.
Okay.
So there's many ways that those things are linked together. And then it could also be side effect of the medicine that you're taking for the pain makes you nauseated.
I mean, I've just heard some people say, my head hurts so bad, my headache is so bad, it's nauseating me. And just didn't know that it was just the pain itself made you sick to your stomach.
There are physiologic explanations for that. It's not a psychiatric thing.
Okay. So I'm not crazy.
Well, that's outside my specialty.
Yeah, jury is still out on that also. All right, painlesslivingshow.com is where you can go and hear the replay of this and many other shows that we've done in the past also.
Yeah, the shows are available for replay, podcast, if you want to call it that.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also on iTunes now.
Oh, cool.
The best thing, though, is to listen live.
And participate.
Call in with your questions. Because even though we can keep the airwaves filled with all kinds of nice tidbits of information, the best information is the specific information that's going to help you.
Exactly. We can try to discern what you may want to know, but it's still not going to be a substitute for you asking what it is specifically.
It's also a lot easier to get into treatment recommendations
Definitely.
If we're talking about something specific.
Yeah, there's no really generic way to approach a specific problem. You can write that down if you'd like to. Use it again
okay,
later.
Let me get a pen here and write that down. Yeah.
All right. So whiplash, basically, again, I'm after a few shows with you here, Doctor, I'm going out and get an inversion table because it just sounds like it's good to cure whatever ails you, you know?
Well, I don't know about anything that ails you, but certainly if you've got any trouble with arthritis in your back, your neck, it's going to be great. Even shoulders, hips, things like that, an inversion table can help you.
Plus the blood rushes to your head, which makes you smarter.
Yeah, obviously.
Which you really don't need any more smartness because you've been here listening to the show, and that's a smart thing to do, and you're going to tune in again next week at this same time, aren't you?
That's right. I'm Dr. Michael Cassaro.
And I'm John Ashton, your co-host.
Please join us here again next week for the Painless Living Show.